Hello, this is David J, and you are listening to Brainwashed Radio.
Fragrant breeze that mingles with a thick stench of cooking fat, clinging grease from a thousand low-rent grills and diners, street musicians howling on the corner of Handy Park, as they did in the 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, even in the 70s and 80s when the wrecking ball moved in. Gob iron and green bullet clasps like a precious thing, and French kissed for tips and the hell of it as if in prayer. More ghosts crowding in. Robert Johnson, young and handsome, brilliant and doomed. Furry Lewis, Memphis Slim, Memphis Willie B, Sunhouse, Sleepy John Estes, Blind Blake, Sonny Boy, Williamson. Oh, ghost now, crowding in. Crowding in. Hard toil and sweet salvation, wood and steel and sweat. A sawn-off bottleneck for a slide. Guitar made from a cigar box, chicken wire and nails. This music needed like food and drink. Sustenance for souls beaten down and bleeding. Southern nights of old times, jazz spilling out, mixed with profanity and laughter from the holy bars on beer. Card sharps, quick as lizards, making their killing play. Bruised angel whores, presided over by bear men in razor sharp attire. Cops turning a blind eye, unless it was election time. Pee Wee Saloon, where everything happened nightly, where W.C. Handy invented sheet music and the craps game never died. Gone, oh gone now, and you have to look hard beyond the new neon in order to see the thing that it once was. But something of the soul remains. That flame was a fierce and burning, blazing light. That flame was a fierce and blazing light.
And that was Elegy for Beale Street from The Mother Tree from David J. Haskins. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
And that comes from The Mother Tree, which comes out very shortly, as well as a new book from you as well, which is titled Rhapsody, Threnody, and Prayer. And they both come out June 6th, the same time, correct?
Yes.
Want to discuss the two of them together. They both, you were writing them both before the pandemic and then sort of like during the pandemic.
Well, the book, that is taken from decades of writing.
Yeah.
And occasionally a poem bubbles up. Not many, but they do bubble up. And so that book is it's a compilation of the poetry, a selection. And it seemed apropos to publish it in tandem with the album, because the album is all spoken word, it's poetry set to music.
Yep.
And all of the pieces that are on the album are in the book.
Yep. And The Mother Tree is a piece that's in the book.
Yeah. It's as it is in the album, it's the central piece, the biggest piece in the book and album. It's an epic. It takes up the whole side, one side of the album. It's about 20 minutes long. And it needed to be epic because it's about my mum.
Yep.
And I wrote it after my mother passed, immediately after.
Mm-hmm.
It was really a response to it. It's a kind of cathartic outpouring. And I didn't finish it in those 3 days, but I finished most of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I concluded it after I'd received her ashes. And then I talk about what I did with those ashes in the poem.
Mm-hmm.
And The Mother Tree.
And what can you tell us about what we just heard?
Yeah, you see, it's the content of the album. It's not all to do with my mother.
Yeah,
you know? There's just two pieces that are, and then I selected three other pieces that I felt complementary, but also contrasting. And Elegy for Beale Street was written in the early 90s when the first time I went to Memphis, the first and only time, I'd never been back, but I did kind of fall in love with it. I was there to look at studios because I was about to record a solo album that became an album called Urban Urbane.
Yep.
And I was looking at studios and Ardent was a favorite. I did look at Sun as well.
Yep.
And another one. And then I stayed there. I just stayed there and just soaked up the music and the atmosphere. And there's so much of that there. Of course, it's steeped in it. And Elegy for Beale Street was written there when I was there in the midst of it on my last day. And because I felt like, although it is steeped in that history, a certain amount of that, of course, is lost, as it is anywhere,
yep,
in any city, you know. So it's an energy in that way, and it's sort of mourning that, but it's also recognizing that the music and what was behind it was so strong that it still pervades.
Yep.
And that's really the main point of that poem, apart from being an evocation of place. It's saying, you know, there's still the spirit remains, mm-hmm, you know, somewhere beyond the new neon. It's still there.
Yep. I think that the Ardent Studios are functional again, from what I've been reading. So I think that there's been a revival of the Ardent Studios recently.
Great. I mean, because it's a wonderful studio.
Yeah.
So much great music is recorded there. Big Star being one of the primary artists who I love.
Well, the whole, and the Stax Vault, that whole.
Oh,
history.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, yeah.
It's all of that. Yeah.
Yep.
Fantastic. I didn't record there because it just wasn't the right vibe for the record that I wanted to make.
Yeah.
I concluded, you know, it's great for a certain type of record.
Mm-hmm.
I know that Palmer Scream recorded there when they were in that sort of swampy southern rock and roll phase. I think they recorded there, and that would obviously suit.
All right. Next up is from Vagabond Songs, which came out in 2020. That was your most recent full-length album, right?
No.
Oh, no, no.
This one after that. Missive to an Angel from the Halls of Infamy and Allure.
And you chose the day that David Bowie died.
Yeah, I did. Because, it sort of, it resonates with the sort of elegiac kind of content of the album, and also the threnody section of the poetry book.
Yep.
There's a lot of poems for those who we have lost.
Yep.
And again, the way I process these things is it tends to just pour out as a song, and it is genuinely cathartic for me. And it's not something that I like contemplate doing. It's very urgent and very immediate.
Yeah.
And I wrote that the day that David Bowie died on that day.
Yeah.
And I recorded it the next day because it was very fortuitous because I had a studio booked. I was on tour and I was in Portland. I had a day off and I was going to record something else, of course. But as soon as that song came along, that's the only thing I could record. And so I went in and told Colin Hegner, who ran the studio, Revolver Studio. Colin Hegner plays in the Brian Jonestown Massacre. Of the change of plan, and he caught the curveball and played ball with me, and I recorded just an acoustic guitar and the vocal first, and then he said, "Do you hear anything else on this?" And I said, "Yeah, I hear quite a lot of things." And he said, "What do you hear?" I said, "Well, I hear piano." So he says, "I know the guy," and he calls up this great piano player. "What else do you hear?" You know, I hear Lap Steel. Oh, I know the guy. So it was like this, you know, continual, what does it need? What do you hear? And then him making a phone call and then a great musician turning up pretty much immediately. Mm-hmm. So we had this like revolving door of talent. Recorded the whole thing and mixed it that day and then invited everybody back. Got a couple of bottles of nice red wine in and we all held a wake for Bowie.
Nice.
Yeah, it was very emotional.
Yeah. Well, you must have all been fans. I mean, you did a cover of Ziggy Stardust. When you were in Bauhaus, and then you must have overlapped when you were on set for The Hunger, right?
By overlapped, you mean meet?
at some point, right? I mean, there.
I was really the only one in the band who had an exchange with Bowie.
Oh, really?
And Peter disappeared because he was he was so overcome with, you know, nerves.
Yeah.
At the prospect of meeting his idol, he had literally, I could just disappear. We couldn't find him. he did. Though he did compliment Daniel on his shoes, which made Daniel's year. And my very memorable meeting with him happened when they were on a break and they were setting up the next scene. And in our little, we had like a little holding area, which was next to Bowie's dressing room. It was in a club called Heaven in London.
Yep.
And we didn't have an actual dressing room. We just had like a holding pen.
Right.
For the animals. With like racks of clothes. But what was there that was great was an old jukebox.
Yep.
And it was stocked with 1950s. 1960s and 70s singles, and it was all great stuff. So we were playing that all the time, you know. But anyway, during this break, I just found myself there. I went over to the jukebox. I was going to play something, and I'm just looking at the tracks, and I feel this very strong presence behind me, and very strong, you know. And then I hear a very familiar voice pipe up. Do you mind if I pick one? And I turn around. It's Bowie. So I go, please be my guest, you know, and step aside. He goes, I'll take it, you know, and he chooses, and I was really intrigued to see what he was going to play. And he punches the numbers, and what he plays is Groovin' with Mr. Blow by Mr. Blow, an instrumental track from 1970. Do you know it?
I don't know it, no.
It features harmonica up front in the mix. Anyway, then he just starts dancing in front of me, like full on, arms in the air, like doing all the Bowie moves. It was just me and him. It was totally surreal. And he's like looking at me, smiling, that big grin, you know, and nodding. And I'm kind of nodding, thinking, this is not real. And then I found that I had this kind of nervous hubris. And I got a bit cheeky because when Low came out, I heard the track A New Career in a New Town. I always thought that he cribbed the harmonica line from Groovin' with Mr. Blow. It's pretty much a straight steal. So I said to Bowie as he's dancing away, oh, this reminds me of something. And he goes, oh, yeah, what? I said, it's one of yours. He goes, what? Which what? I said, it's off a Low. He goes, oh, come on then, what? Which one? I said, A New Career in a New Town. At which point he didn't stop dancing, but he like winked and put his finger to his lips. And that was a magic moment.
That's amazing. I had a run-in with Bowie as well when Wire had reformed in 2000, and I was doing a Wire website when I was doing Brainwashed and stuff. They invited me down to New York City, and I was upstairs at the backstage or the VIP area at Irving Plaza, and it's just this tiny corridor, and I'm standing over a table with my friends, and they're like, John, you got to get out of the way, somebody's coming towards you. And I stand up, and there's David standing right in front of me with his bodyguards, and I'm like, and I couldn't do anything. He shook my hand, and I just had to step aside. I'm like, okay, you've got to go. That was my only run-in with David Bowie. So when you see David Bowie, you just have to step aside, I think. So
yes. As I did at the jukebox.
Exactly. All right, here it is. The Day That David Bowie Died, from Vagabond Songs.
Boys were crying
chatting in the nightclub. A late night lamentation, closing bar. I flick my fag into the gutter. It fled and sparked like a shooting star. I'll meet you in the Buddhist Bardo. It's several floors above the club where we first heard the saddest disco. Traded dreams for a ticket stub. The ghosts that haunted Hammersmith are banished. Ziggy has retired now for good. With incense, prayers, and glitter incantation, the ending is told in old drawn blood. Where were you the day that David Bowie died? Where were you the day that David Bowie died? I was freezing, my eyes are falling. Not shy of rain, smoking cigarettes and drinking whiskey with a beautiful young girl, my Sybil Vane. Mr. Jones, we go way back, back to those adolescent seeds, seeds that bloomed into a flaming love life, seeds and blooms and flames fulfilling. Like the very first, and now in pristine, hot-ripped retrospection, it all makes sense, the cessation of a raging thirst. Where were you the day that David Bowie died?
star-crossed and crashed sky, still your looks have me in chains. But do you still have that white horse running through your veins? How tight was that tourniquet? How clean is your blood? Did you really take the cure? Is your Jones gone for good? I feel like Robert Johnson at the Three Forks Saloon. I can't shake your head shot, so I light another coffin nail. Go down to the crossroads with that hellhound on my trail. All the lamps are broken, I'm dancing in the dark, trying to warm my fingers over a mercurial spot. I feel like Robert Johnson at Three Forks Saloon. Feel like Robert Johnson at Three Forks Saloon. Put a knife under my bed, to cut the pain and heart. Take it all away, 'cause I need some gravel on my path. Summoned by Hades' call, who will be left to carry me? Who will take the weight of the pall? Who will shine my brass plate? Who will heathen hold when my soulmate has forsaken me? Who will catch me when I fall? Feel like Robert Johnson at the Three Forks Saloon. Feel like Robert Johnson at the Three Forks Saloon. Feel like Robert Johnson at the Three Forks Saloon. Feel like Robert Johnson.
That was Feel Like Robert Johnson at the Three Forks Saloon from Vagabond Songs. David, you want to give us some little backstory on that?
Well, obviously it's steeped in the legend of Robert Johnson, which is something that fascinates me. And the Three Forks Saloon was where Mr. Johnson met his untimely end at a very young age.
Yep.
Apparently at the hand of a jealous husband of a lover of his who poisoned Johnson. So that's just really, it's a symbol of a dangerous, precarious situation that is all caught up in a love affair.
Yep.
And at the time I wrote that, I was kind of knocking around this young girl. I was, late 20s. I was an actress, and I suspected that she was an ex-junkie and maybe was still using. And she might have even had a jealous boyfriend. So it tied in, you know. And I'm writing about that, and just being extremely apprehensive about taking this relationship further. I didn't take it any further, but I write the song, and that's what that's about.
Have you heard about the book Brother Robert, Growing Up with Robert Johnson? It's written by his younger stepsister, who actually was living in Amherst, Massachusetts, which is where I grew up in. It's worth checking out. It kind of dispels the lore of Robert Johnson. It's a really interesting book from his stepsister. Younger stepsister.
Okay, I made a note for that.
Yeah,
okay.
Brother Robert, Growing Up with Robert Johnson. Yeah, it's a memoir. It's a pretty interesting book from somebody who lived in the same town that that I grew up in. Yeah.
All right.
Next up, Bauhaus from the Burning from the Inside album, an album, you know, when things were falling apart. Who Killed Mr. Moonlight? Also the name of your first book. Tell us about the book, the song, anything you want to discuss.
I just felt compelled to write that book. And it came out in 2014. It took me about 7 years to write it.
Yep.
And I really did think that the story was over. I thought it had been concluded. I was convinced of that. And I thought, well, now's the time to write the book. Of course, it continued.
Yeah.
It's checkered path. And now it is really done.
Yeah.
So there is that. I'm contemplating writing an addendum. Because there's so much of the story that has not been told.
Yeah.
You know. It's a story from, you know, from my point of view.
Mm-hmm.
From, you know, 10 feet back from the lead singer's microphone.
But you had such an important role.
Standing by the bass amp, you know.
but you and your brother had such an important role. I think that Bauhaus doesn't Bauhaus doesn't have as much credit to the rhythm. I mean, you guys were the pulse. You guys were the heartbeat of the group. I mean, there was such a driving force in that group for so long. And you know, I think, you know, yeah, everybody knows the front people, but you know, you provided such a foundation for the group, you and your brother. And you know, I've been a fan for, you know, decades. So thank you for your
thank you. Well, Kevin is a great drummer. He's very inventive, and he's great for me as a bass player to play with. And not predictable at all. And that band was never predictable.
No,
and of course. I mean, my input was more than playing bass, because I mean, I wrote some of the lyrics. And I wrote Bela Lugosi's Dead, those lyrics, you know. And really, and I gave the band its name. And a lot of the style of the group, you know, it did come from me. And also the designs of the sleeves and the artwork, it was split between myself and Daniel.
Yep.
Daniel did a lot of that as well.
Yep.
You can
definitely see it.
Very hands-on.
It carried through in, you know, the other stuff Love and Rockets, Tones on Tail, like all the other things that evolved and carried through and carried on from there. So it was, you know, it's an ever-evolving story. And, you know, thank you for your...
And it's not... It's not just music, you know. It is, you know, the artwork and everything, and Gesamtkunstwerk, as the Germans say, the complete work, like not just one thing, many things coming together to make the thing.
Yep. Yep. All right. Well, here it is from Burning from the Inside, Who Killed Mr. Moonlight?
Consider green lakes and the idiocy of clocks. Someone shot nostalgia in the back. Someone shot our innocence and all our colors.
Kill Mr. Moonlight.
rainbird sings a song so sad in blue. Like a stranded insect stuck in a bowl of glue. He tries to fly, but he will die if he ever leaves the zoo. Rainbird, rainbird, rainbird swoops through the chimney pots and rain. Rainbird flies to the edge of a gilded cage. Hiding in the spotlight of a famous stage. He tries to become invisible by stealing the front page. Rainbird, rainbird. Turns his nose up at the dish. Now that you have it, you wanna give it away. When you had to work so hard, slogging for a pittance in a boot and shoe yard, that's when you wanted what you now give away.
And that is Rainbird from Love and Rockets, from Earth, Sun, Moon. Such an amazing album. I love that album so much. It really just showed how diverse you all were. I mean, it was, you couldn't say that Bauhaus, David J, Love and Rockets, it was one style. You had so many different styles, and so many different styles even within an album, and you know, that was all proof right there. Tell me what was Express was just such a massive breakthrough, and it seems like Earth, Sun, Moon, you kind of like had a moment to sort of catch your breath a little bit. Tell me, what can you recall from then?
We wanted to make an acoustic record, having made two electric, you know, electric guitar featured records. It just felt like the way to go. We always followed our instincts, and just, it's just what feels right, you know. And even not, it wasn't discussed, you know, the songs start coming up and they're of a certain type, and we were writing these acoustic songs, and we just had a real feeling for an acoustic record, you know, and it was in contrast to what had preceded it. Mm-hmm. And again, it's those first two records are very psychedelic.
Yeah,
but Earth, Sun, Moon is psychedelic as well. It's more of a pastoral, sort of laid back, getting it together in the country, type of psychedelia.
Yep. And I was listening to your solo stuff again, the concept of sadaje came up again too, and you've come back to that concept.
Yes, which is the Portuguese word, and it's used in fado. It's kind of like the Portuguese blues in a way, traditional music, and it's just this concept. There isn't really an equivalent word in the English language,
right?
But what it's expressing is a deep yearning, a longing for that which has been loved and lost.
Yep,
and it's a kind of melancholic reverie, and I think it's really beautiful. Mm-hmm. So that's what that's about. Yeah.
There's been a resurgence of interest in Love and Rockets. I know Beggar's Banquet just did a reissue campaign last year, and it sold out pretty quickly.
Yeah.
And you were on tour with Jane's Addiction until that abruptly ended here in Boston. Sorry.
We were on tour with Jane's Addiction until we weren't.
Right. But are there...
This ended very, very abruptly.
Do you... I think there's in more interest to do some more stuff again.
Well, there's certainly interest in Love and Rockets from promoters and agents and fans, you know.
Yep.
And there's some interest from the band. From
oh, good.
Because we had such a good time. The last two tours we did quite recently, you know, we love those tours.
Yeah.
And we felt like we were playing the best we've ever played.
Oh, excellent.
And we were into it. But with no new records, no new recordings.
Yep.
But certainly it's not out of the question that we will play live again. But not until, it wouldn't happen until next year.
Yep. All right, we're going to go back to The Mother Tree, which is due out on June 6th. And
Yeah. You
have some upcoming events too. I'm going to put the dates on brainwashed.com. Can you tell me what to expect at, I think you got some shows in California, New York, and a few other dates coming up?
Yeah, well, all over really. And
okay.
It's like a snowball and it keeps building. And there were two more. I'm now being approached by people interested in booking.
Okay.
You know, so I'm working it into the touring schedule and the trajectory. So I'm adding to it all the time. Yeah. The closest I come to you, I think, is New York.
Yep.
On the 18th of June at the Slipper Room, which is a place I played before. In fact, it's the first place I've played post pandemic, and I had a great night there.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lovely little magical little theater.
Yep.
In the East Village, it's great. And I'll be appearing there with a great magician, Matt Holtzclaw.
Okay.
Who does unbelievable things with lit cigarettes, amongst other works of wonder. Yes, anyway, so yes, adding as we go along to the tour. And what you can expect is the first third of it will be the spoken word.
Mm-hmm.
And I have got some pre-recorded music that will be playing behind me when I do that, and then I shall pick up my trusty acoustic guitar and play some songs from right across the board, from solo, a couple of covers, Love and Rockets, maybe even one or two Bauhaus songs.
Excellent.
And also occasionally I'll be joined by other musicians. Sometimes it'll be just purely solo, but other times not.
All right. And then you want to talk up Incantation to Hearn and tell me about the people that you've been playing with on The Mother Tree.
Yeah, well, that group, Rakia, I discovered by serendipitous accident one night in downtown LA. I went to see a friend of mine, Nora Keys, play, and she was on before this group, and I was about to leave, but they were setting up. I thought, I'll just see what they're like. Oh, maybe stay for a song. And I stayed for the whole set because I was just bowled over by them. They were so great. It was all acoustic instrumental music. And they were just brilliant players. And it was obviously, you know, they were responding to each other. There was a certain amount of improvisation going on. And I had it in the back of my head to record some spoken word with music. And I wasn't sure whether I would be multi-tracking that, which is something I've done in the past, or if I'd be bringing in players. And as soon as I heard this group, I thought, wow, this group could work really well with this. And beyond that, you know, maybe some songs, which we did, we've recorded some songs as well. So we were in this, I asked them, you know, if they'd be interested, and they were, and we were in the studio within a couple of days, and we recorded The Mother Tree in one take. And how that came about, I sent them the piece, the poem, and then I gave them carte blanche really to come up with whatever. And then I didn't want to hear it before we recorded, so they played me just a little bit of it in the studio, and we all met up to do it. And I really didn't have to give them any direction. I may have said slow it down a little bit, that's all. And we just went in and did it with the vocal live, you know, as well, which is what we did for all the tracks. And that was the MO for all the tracks.
Yep.
So it's a very alive, and it's, I love that, you know, it's like, it's not overworked out.
Yeah.
It's very spontaneous. And when we went back, we also brought in an additional percussionist, because I could hear subtle percussion here and there. And that really comes to the fore in The Incantation to Home, which is it's got a primal sort of pagan quality, because it's, you know, it's about a pagan,
yep,
deity, nature god, the god of the hunt, the wild hunt, a wild god, as Nick Cave would say, a very wild god. Relates to Canunus as well, which is another pagan deity in Celtic mythology, to do with nature and represented with antlers. They both are represented with antlers and fur. And it's funny, because when I went in to do that vocal, because then when we were recording, it was right in the middle of the pandemic, so we were sort of isolated, and I did the vocals in a little tiny little back room that had been set up with a mic in it, and somebody had mysteriously left an antler on a small table in front of the microphone.
Mm-hmm.
And it was so apropos, I actually found myself picking that up and wielding it as I did the vocal. So I'm like thrashing around like a mad shaman in this broom closet, wielding an antler. But it turned out well. Again, only one take there.
Excellent. All right. Well, both the book and the album are due out on June 6th. The album is coming out on Aerototox Decodings. The book is published by Phonograph Media. I'm going to have the live dates up on brainwashed.com for people to check out and look to see if David J. is in their neck of the woods. Thank you so much for taking your time and being with us. And I hope to see you when you're out and about.
Yeah, you're welcome. It's been very good. Yeah. By the way, it's Erototox.
Erototox. Sorry. Okay.
Sorry.
All right. Well, thank you so much.
You're very welcome. It's a great chat.
All right.
All right. See you, my friend. Thank you.
feel you breathing through the leaves, and the leaf beats, I can taste you moving through the roots, and the root beats, the root beats. I can smell you rising from the pine, and the pine beats, the pine beats. The wind is a dull blade, soon to be sharpened on the flint edge of winter. And the wind beats, through the wood, and the wood beats, I can sense you flowing through the horn beats, the horn beats. Fire amid the falls, peak rage, and the fire beats, the fire beats, the fire beats. Blood moon, usher to the dark time, calling forth the lone wolf night, and the night beats, the night beats. Sequestered in the still of aromatic autumn, the brackish earth that holds the lily's sleep, and the earth beats, gods never go away, they just shift their shape. They live inside the bottles in your fridge, they live inside the potted houseplants, they live inside computers. They live inside the stirrings of domesticated animals. live inside the skin stretched on the drum. And the drum beats, 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 loud. The drum beats loud. The drum beats loud.